Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH. Know Your Risk Radio is hosted by Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often volatile markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us for the most scintillating hour in finance radio. And like I was telling the folks in the 3-minute update, we are still at the lake. I'm still doing this from the makeshift lake bunker studio, if you will, which is the master bedroom that I'm staying in. So the view is great. I'm just hoping the audio isn't lagging. And on top of that, we had some family friends come over and stay a couple nights with us, and they're little boys, so stinking cute. He's about 18 months old, though. He had a little cold within 2 days, 3 days of him being here. My wife and I both came down with something. I feel okay. I don't feel sick, but just kind of congested and kind of hacking. And so I know my voice sounds a little off. I'm hoping the audio was okay. It was last week, so hopefully hopefully it's not too big of a pain to listen to. But anyway, great show planned for you today. Honestly, the thing that is on my mind the most from doing the show, and I actually have an employee over with me at the lake house right now. And he was asking me about an hour ago, what are you going to talk about on the show today? And I said, well, there's a lot of different things that we can get to. I feel like we could do like an hour show just on the market update itself. Because I just continue to be fascinated about how no matter what happens, and it's just strange to me when you look at the world today, when you look at the banking issues that we've got, when you look at inflation prints still coming in hot, even though leading indicators in the economy. And guys, here's the thing. You may not hear it on CNBC, okay? You're not going to. And it's just, I wish... And I can run you through some of the numbers. Right now, for instance, you look at this historic rally we've had. Earnings are about, I think as of today, I'd have to check. Chase would know. So I need to, the last count I saw, we're sitting at earnings being down about 8.5%. After these quarterly reports that we've just gotten out. And those earnings reports aren't horrible. It's just odd to see the market reaction to it. Like you look at Apple. And again, not a horrible report, but you look at Apple, it's trading at its most lofty valuation of the last at least 15 years. For any extended period of time, I mean, you can have these one-offs that happen in corporate earnings on a quarter-to-quarter basis that can make things look bizarre for a while. But truly, if you look at normalized earnings, and yet we had just announced the third consecutive quarter of declining growth and declining profits. It's not the kind of decline that should make the stock plummet, so I'm not saying that. It's just so odd to see things priced so optimistically. And the data you're getting is not horrible. Truth be told, I'll be the first to admit, I thought it would have devolved faster than this. And I think we've been talking about that for the last few weeks. But it's not good. And you listen to regular market commentary, and you listen to CNBC, and you listen to so many of these places, the economy's booming. It's just not the case. And so much of the GDP numbers, people don't really understand GDP. And I got to be honest with you. I could probably count myself among them. And what I mean is I understand it generally, but there are so many different components that go into GDP. But when you really dig into the GDP numbers, the manufacturing that is still going on with car manufacturers still filling in backlogs and different things, that is impacting GDP in a very significant way. But it is not indicative of current demand. It's not. I mean, you're running right now, I believe, at an annual sale pace of about 15 to 15.4 million car sales a year. The average in a kind of an average long going, long-term basis would be about 17 million cars a year. Again, not horrible, but certainly not good, right? We see it with job revisions, right? Oh, the jobs data keeps coming out hot. 6 months in a row now, they've announced hot jobs data, and within the next month, they revised it downward. And pretty drastically in a lot of ways. Not in a big enough way to where it's really making a dent out of unemployment. But I also will tell you the unemployment numbers, and we talked about this on the show before. I think unemployment has become so massaged. And so the unemployment number does not mean what it meant even 20 years ago. It just doesn't. I'm not saying it's farcical. I'm not saying it's complete nonsense. I'm just saying there's so many different adjustments that they make to it. I don't really know what it means other than a metric that the Fed looks at. Honestly, it is not indicative of the jobs market. And other people will go, well, the jobs market is still really tight. That's true. In a lot of areas, it's softening consistently or significantly, right? Like you look in tech. Now, tech, again, is not collapsing. I guess what I'm saying is we go through the earnings numbers. We look at it on a year-over-year basis. We look at input costs up, revenues down, profits down. None of it's awful. Now, it's concerning to me, and we'll get into that. It's concerning numbers to me because the real impacts of interest rates have only started to begun, you know, or to come to fruition. It's only really started to get, where you can feel it, right? It's only starting to get to the point where interest rates are really impacting things. And you can see it in consumer lending loan. You can see it in consumer lending. It is contracting pretty significantly. You can see it in what it takes to get financed, especially on commercial properties. You can see it all over the place. Now, the jobs market obviously has not gotten hit. Like I said, there's still a lot of resilience there. Chase Taylor, our analyst, who's been on the show many times, and if you guys have listened before, you know him. He's pulled up a lot of data that he refers to as labor hoarding. So he thinks that a lot of labor hoarding is going along, meaning businesses were almost scared about the labor shortage, and so they're keeping people longer. And the way he comes to this is by comparing jobs data to hours worked and part-time labor. And when you look at that, that's another piece of conflicting data, meaning if the unemployment rate and the jobs market was as robust as they'd lead us all to believe, and again, I'm not saying there's some nefarious, conspiracy to make it look better or mislead people or anything like that. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if it was as robust, well, what you could do is you could go back and look at unemployment metrics, how we measured unemployment like 40 years ago. I guarantee you if we run those numbers, it ain't 3.6% or 3.5%. And there's just so much gaming in it, right? There's seasonality, meaning, you have a drop and they're like, well, normally that happens. There's just, like I said, it's not a good metric. I wish that we would, I'm not saying it's a useless metric. What I'm saying is I feel like there almost needs to be two. Because I don't really know what the unemployment rate means, but it is not really a good gauge of the employment situation. It really isn't. So anyway, and then you look at the earnings. The earnings keep coming in light. Amazon had a decent report. They had a good quarter, but not anything to be euphoric about, certainly. Guidance came in a little bit better than I would have expected, especially in light of what they were saying last year. But it's muddled. It is extraordinarily muddled. And like I said to you guys earlier, I will be the first to admit that it is not deteriorating as fast as I thought. Now, whatever metric you want to look at, whether it's used car sales, whether it's car sales, whether it's real estate still selling way below trend. And what happened yesterday, I want to say the 30-year mortgage hit 7.4, 7.5. And you can, people like, and house prices still aren't caving. Guys, you've listened to this show before. House prices aren't caving because so few homes are selling, right? So think about it. What it means is the homes that are selling are the people that are not hampered by higher interest rates. And the homes that are selling are people that can afford to be extraordinarily patient to get the price they want. So what does that tell you? And I've said this a million times before on the show, but when you look at any market, the way markets work is every price you see, including in real estate, including in stock markets, the price you see is the last transaction price, right? It's just the price of the last trade. All right. When volumes drop this much and trade volumes and sale volumes have dropped so much, I just think it's very disingenuous to sit there and go, yeah, I saw a report the other day where I was like, it was like real estate is only down 4.5% and starting to rebound. And you look at them and go, guys, you're quoting price data in a market where volumes are like 40% off normal. Which means the reason that other prices, right? The reason more homes aren't selling, we all know there's plenty of demand. Why are homes not selling? Prices are too high. Which means what? They need to come down. And after the last 2 days, they need to come down more. Because 30-year money is even more expensive. Now, again, I will still sit there and tell you, I'm not looking for a collapse in home prices. But like we said, you know, as much as 16 months ago, if you think home prices are going to continue to accelerate, Godspeed, good luck. Not with rates doing what they're doing. It's just not there. And like I said, the thing that is confounding to me is the multiples. It's not that the stock market hasn't collapsed. I don't think it deserves it right at this point. I don't think it deserves some big 40% plunge or anything like that. I think it'd be too cheap. But in light of what these companies are up against, and in light of the deluge of corporate debt that comes up for refinancing next year, you know, the stock market's supposed to be looking out 18. I just don't see how it is doing that. When I look out over the next 18 months, best case scenario, I see higher rates than we were expecting even 6 months ago. I see commodity prices bouncing back, specifically oil and energy. I see oil and energy. I mean, think about this. Oil's back above 80, but it's not, you know, it's not going through the roof. We're not at 120, 130. But oil inventories, this last week, the EIA data came out. And oil had a 17 million barrel draw, the largest on record. So you saw the largest drop in oil inventories on record. And again, the bulls will look at you and go, that's how strong the economy is. And you're like, well, I think it's more indicative of the fact that there's just no new production coming online. Saudi's just cut again. They just cut oil production again. And, you know, we've been saying that for a long time, too. And Chase Taylor, our analyst, has certainly been beating on that drum. This idea that Saudi Arabia and these other Middle Eastern countries are just going to sit there and watch by far their most valuable resource, you know, get pushed to extinction and let these other, you know, democracies via the release of their SPRs push the price down. You know, I just don't understand where that expectation comes from. And so they continue to cut. Now, the funny thing is that the cuts from a lot of oil bulls are like, oh man, the price is going to go way higher. Typically speaking, you know, these guys are pretty good at the oil game. They've been doing it for a while. Typically speaking, those cuts in production that you see coming from places like Qatar and Saudi Arabia and, you know, the OPEC countries, typically those cuts proceed, again, they're pretty good at their business. They're pretty good at forecasting oil demand. Typically, cuts in production indicate demand weakness. And that's just another thing that when you look at the stock market, it's just two different stories being told. And again, it's not a stock market that I think should get smashed to smithereens. But it's also a stock market that shouldn't be going parabolic. Just because it's not there. The earnings aren't there. The cost of goods sold, you know, the cost of goods isn't there. You know, you still see massive pressure on input costs. You still hear companies left and right on conference calls talking about the pressures from inflation and talking about how the consumer's willingness to pay higher prices is fading fast. So again, it's just that mismatch. It's not an economy that I'm looking at in a market that I think should, you know, just get blown to heck. But it's one where you're sitting there, having said that, you look at the euphoria and the exuberance, and that's a head scratcher. Let me say this again. Look at this rally. You got earnings down 8.5%. The biggest company in the market, 3 consecutive quarters now, right? Apple, of declining revenue, declining profits, and again, not bad. It's not they're getting killed. It's just a head scratcher. You're just sitting there going, so this equates the biggest valuation for Apple in the last 15 years? The first period of time they got 3 consecutive quarters of declining margins, declining earnings? It's just an odd thing. It's just a very, very, very odd scenario. So anyway, you know what? We're going to do a quick break right here. I want to try to keep these segments separated, so we're going to do a quick break right here. As always, guys, we're not sitting here telling you to get out of the market. We're not sitting there telling you to go all into the market. And we don't do that because people that do that, right? What do we always say? The only guy whose opinion you don't need to respect is the guy who's certain. What we're saying is if you're within 5 years of retirement, or you're in retirement, in situations like this, you need exposure to risk assets because historically, if they're the right risk assets, meaning stocks and real estate in certain circumstances, energy and potentially metals and natural resources, things of that nature. If they're the right ones in an inflationary environment, they can be an incredible protection, right? But with all of this uncertainty, a euphoric market and an economy that looks like it is slow grinding into recession still, I'll continue to pound on this. These guys that sit there and go recession off, I just don't know what they're looking at. I don't know what the data they're looking at. The deceleration in the economy is slower than I would have thought it had been. But all of the trend lines are down. Meaning if you continue on this pace, and I honestly, maybe this is sacrilege, but I honestly think you need to take the GDP numbers and throw them out. Because I think that they just embody a ton of noise right now. When I'm looking at wages, when I'm looking at hours worked, when I'm looking at sales and revenues and earnings trajectories, when I'm looking at credit issuance, when I'm looking at auto sales, when I'm looking at real estate, all of these things, I don't see disasters. But what I see is deceleration. And not horrible. It's not plunging. Credit issuance is pulling back pretty dramatically. What is it? 50, something like 55, and I might have said this last week, but 55% of loan applications for cars are being denied. 55%. And of the average car that's being sold, you're looking at a financing rate of like 12%. Here's another one that we want to keep track of. A lot of the homes, now, I don't think it's a huge problem because there have not been a lot of homes sold in the last 2 years, right? But of the homes that were sold in the last 2 years, there were a lot of 1 and 2 year teaser rates offered by a lot of these home manufacturers. Well, we're reaching a point right now, and we'll see more of it over the course of the next 8 to 12 months. They were 1 to 2 year teaser rates. So they give you a low rate as an intro, and then you adjust back higher to reflect, you know, the rate environment that currently exists. That starts expiring now. And those deals start expiring increasingly over the next, like I said, 8 to 12 months. So again, it's that mismatch that's just kind of eerie where you're sitting there going, look, it's not awful, but the market, you know, you got a market right now priced at 27 times earnings with earnings down almost 9% year over year. It's just remarkable. So again, like I was saying, if you are in retirement or you're within 5 years of retirement in an inflationary market where inflation is the threat, and I think it's going to be the threat for some time, guys, I just do. I think we've turned the corner and entered an inflationary period. You need that exposure to risk assets, but you also need the correct exposure and you need risk management. You need the kind of retirement portfolio where you're good regardless of what happens. I mean, look at the world today. Look at the economy, right? What are you willing to rule out? I'm not willing to rule anything out. actually, I think as interest rates go higher and as I watch these economic trends and I watch the powers that be so focused on metrics that I just don't think matter anymore, like the unemployment rate, I think the potential for things getting nastier than most expect is growing every single day. What I don't see is any reason for all of this optimism. And maybe optimism isn't even the right word. Maybe being disconnected. But my whole point is saying you need a retirement portfolio where you're good no matter what happens. Right? If asset prices continue to go up and inflation remains the main threat of our time, the only way to protect ourselves from inflation is making more money, right? At the same time, when we look at the debt loads, and again, you guys heard me say this 100 times, and the underlying economic trends and all the other issues we see in geopolitical problems, and then the asset prices themselves, right? When I see underlying reality not very good, usually it tells me it's a good time to buy assets. Well, then I look at asset prices and houses are a record in affordability. Stock market's second or third most highly valued it's ever been in history. There's a mismatch. So what do I need to do? I need to be able to manage risk. I need to be able to keep making money and growing if things get more expensive, because that's how I'm going to protect myself from inflation. But I also need to know that if reality strikes and it strikes hard, and somehow the Fed or the U.S. government isn't able to bail it out, that things could get really nasty. I don't see that happening because I think the Fed will just throw money at everything. But I need to make sure that I'm good no matter what. And so many of you guys have these binary portfolios where as long as things don't implode, you're fine. If they do, you might have to sell your house. Okay, that's not managing risk. There's a better way. We can actually build you a portfolio that is costs less, that has more upside capability, meaning market goes up, you make more money. Not all the time. And you know, I've told you guys this year, I think between the two portfolios, we're now up 1% on the year, something like that, 2% on the year. Market's been pulling back. We've actually had a pretty nice 3-week run here. Good pullback in the market, and our portfolios have gotten a nice bounce. But we're not going to be perfect all the time. But if we miss, if a bad year is us making 3 or 4% as opposed to losing 30 or 40, that's not going to disrupt your retirement. You need to know you're good either way. So give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Follow me on Twitter at KYR Radio. Anyway, you guys know the drill. Stick with us through the break. We'll be right back to get into, I'll tie up the market update and want to get into our next segment talking about the issues that the Treasury is facing. And I think they could come into focus here for most investors and even the market here in the next few weeks. So, hey guys, that brings me to another point. As we all know, especially in this environment, market conditions are constantly changing, right? And these advisors that are going to put you into a portfolio and tell you to ride the waves, they're not equipped to handle that level of volatility and protect your retirement portfolio. Okay. They're just not. That's not what they do. At Bulwark Capital, we're actively managing your portfolio to navigate these issues as they arise by utilizing our risk management strategies on a daily basis. Okay. Find out how we're actively managing risk by requesting our common sense investing guide. So call us now at 866-779-RISK. Again, that's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com or follow me on Twitter at KYR Radio. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
We're with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Zach, you talk about how you actively manage portfolios. How does active management help people with risk management?
Because market conditions are constantly changing. Those advisors who put you in a portfolio and simply tell you to just ride the waves may not be equipped to handle the level of volatility we're seeing daily. And it's that constant changing volatility that can put retirement portfolios at a larger risk for loss. Risk management is our number one focus at Bulwark Capital, and our strongest leverage against loss is actively managing every portfolio, looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give you as much upside as possible.
Find out about how Bulwark Capital actively manages risk. Call them now and you'll get a free copy of Zach's Common Sense Investing Guide, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK. Or you can go to knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. All right. So a couple other data points. I was pulling up my notes here and I knew I was missing a couple. Really interesting data point, you know, as one, if you look at the stocks of the home builders in the U.S., I mean, they would tell you that it's a raging. I mean, you got stocks like D.H. Horton at all-time highs while their revenues are down 40% year over year. It's wild. Again, wild times. What that would look to me is just, again, a market that's disconnected from reality. At the same time, just weird times. I don't know. I don't know what to make of some of these things. You know, your revenue's down 40% year over year and your stock's making all-time highs. Okay. 40% decline in revenue. But this was another one that got me, right? For all the talk about the tightness in supply and real estate markets and residential housing markets and all that stuff, residential construction jobs had their worst numbers since COVID. I mean, they went negative and they went sharply negative in the month of, it looks like June, or I believe that metric is June 15th through July 15th. I'm pretty sure is what that measurement is. But it's the worst mark since the beginning of COVID. And why that's important is that, remember how we told you guys that jobs are lagging indicators, meaning if you're looking for recession or economic slowdown, jobs are usually going to be the last place you find it, right? Well, when we look at jobs, the leading indicator for jobs tends to be construction jobs. So the first jobs you see starting to roll over in a decline in jobs period, right? So if the unemployment number was going to go up, typically speaking, historically, the first declines you'd see, the first part of the job market that you'd see that would post weakness would be construction jobs. And then of those, residential real estate construction. And like I said, that's the worst monthly print since COVID. So again, none of it is disaster. It's just this mismatch where, you know, if you had a market trading at 18, 19 times earnings, that would feel a little rich, but you could kind of get it. You know, I still think that'd be a bit rich in this market. But then you look at it and go 27 times. It's just hard to get your head around, let alone if you start factoring in discount rates with higher interest rates. The 10-year yield now popping back up to effectively, you know, flirting with 4.25, which is the previous high that we hit last year. And for those of you home gamers, I told you I love long bonds. I do. I obviously, we bought the majority of ours at above 4%, so I'd prefer to have them there. But we bought plenty below there. Honestly, I think any long bonds you bought 3.5% or higher will be good in the long run. But, you know, it looks like rates want to push a little higher still. So if you're freaking out about it, if you're looking at those long bonds being down a little bit in value, first of all, I don't think you should. You know, we're talking about 4 or 5% in something that if you held it for the last 2 years, it's probably paid you about 6. So I don't think there's any reason to freak out about it. But what I do think is, and I've said on this show many times before, I really don't think you can have too much long bond exposure. I do think that that's wrong. I do think that if you want to flip out of long bonds, meaning bonds that have 10-year duration or longer, flip them into twos and just wait. I don't think that would be a horribly bad idea. Because I actually think the odds are that, and I remember telling you guys months ago, I thought the Fed was done. I still can't believe they've hiked as much as they have. And I've talked about this. I don't want to go into it again. But I just think that they've made a huge, huge policy error, which they've tried to raise rates and soft talk the market at the same time. and boosts liquidity at the same time. I think they should have done exactly the opposite. And the reason I think they should have done it is A, to avoid a even larger bubble and even a more violent drop when reality finally hits. But B, once again, what have you done? You've made credit way more expensive. That is going to be disproportionately on the backs of the average consumers and simultaneously boost asset prices, which just widens the wealth gap. I think back every once in a while to that interview that I believe was on 60 Minutes that Jerome Powell did. And they asked him about the wealth gap. And he looked at him and said, you know what? I think there's a lot of different reasons for it, but the Fed has nothing to do with it. And I look back in that and I go, man, I don't think he's a bad guy. I just don't think you could be more out of touch. I just don't know how you can possibly say that. When you look at Fed policy, everything they have done benefits the rich guy and the big guy at the expense of the little guy. It just does. It just is. I don't even think it's intentional. I'm not saying Jay Powell's a bad guy. I'm not saying Yellen's out there trying to stick it to the little guy. I just think they're incompetent. I just think that they're looking at a lot of outdated metrics that just don't tell the same story anymore. Or maybe if those metrics were the same and those calculations were the same that they were 40 years ago, maybe they would be telling that message, but they're not. They're completely different. And they've been massaged so much to the point where I'm not going to say they're worthless. Like I said earlier, I just don't know exactly what they mean. Right? You know, when you're looking at data points and there's so many changes, there's so many adjustments, you're like, I'm not really sure what I'm looking at here. And that's kind of how I feel like on unemployment. They've got their hedonic adjustments. They got their seasonal adjustments. They had all these different things. You know, not to mention even earnings. You know, you watch these companies and you got to really look. And unfortunately, we've become like a country or a culture of just headlines, right? Just clickbait. But you really have to look into the numbers to realize how bizarre some of this stuff is. You see a stock popping because it beat expectations. Now, there's been plenty of stocks that beat expectations but had pretty bad guidance. And so even though they beat expectations, they went down. But you got these companies that beat expectations. They issue what sounds like, to me, really rosy guidance. And you see the stock rallying like crazy. And you go, well, hold on a second. You beat expectations, but your earnings are still down 10% year over year. So, I mean, I don't get paid as an investor by expectations. Wish I did, because it'd be easy to make money in this market. But we don't get paid by expectations. We get paid by profits. And if profits are dropping and interest rates are rising, that doesn't equal more expensive stocks. And if you recognize that, if that's concerning you, you're like, yeah, something's off here. I don't get this. Which I know a lot of you say because I talk to so many on a weekly basis. But if that's what you're saying, I don't think that you should pass that up. I don't think you should disregard that. I also don't think you should sell all your stocks and buy a gold-backed IRA. I don't think, you know, like we've said on the show before, I don't believe in one answer investing. I don't believe in one asset class investing. If you don't buy gold now, you're going, you know, I don't believe in that. Can it play a part? Of course. But what you need is risk management. You need to know, like I was saying in the previous segment, you need to know that if all this shenanigans comes to a head and comes crashing down, that you're going to be fine. But as equally, you know, I watch the data go every single day. Equally, we need to have enough exposure to the upside because it's the only way to protect us from inflation. And I know that hits home with so many of you. Like I said, I hear it from you on a weekly basis. So quit sitting around. Right? Quit second guessing yourself. Take some action. Talk to us. Talk to somebody else. Quit paying people an expense fee just to ride an index fund. Okay? This is your retirement. You only get one of them, guys. It's got to be good no matter what happens.
But before we go, guys, quick note here. With where the markets have been recently, the most common concern we're hearing from people that we're talking to right now, from people like you, it's just the need to lower risk in their portfolio. I think a lot of what we're talking is resonating and they see this, right?
Risk management is our focus at Bulwark Capital. That's what we are all about. Okay, we can lower your fees, drastically reduce your risk, build you a portfolio where I can look at you and go, hey, you're not going to be ruined. You don't have enough risk on the table. You're going to be fine no matter what the economic outcome is. And by the way, there's also a lot more upside, right? Give us a call and find out how we can help lower the risk in your portfolio with increasing upside potential, okay, by using our risk management strategy. So call us now at 866-779-RISK. Again, that's 866-779-RISK. Guys, COVID collapse, market down 36.5%, our average client down 5.5%. Last year, NASDAQ down 33%, S&P down 21%, bonds down 20-30%, our average client portfolio down 5.5%. The previous year, market was up 20+, our average client was up 16-17%. But my whole point is this, that protection does not need to cost you. Okay, call us, 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
We're with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Zach, you talk about how you actively manage portfolios. How does active management help people with risk management?
Because market conditions are constantly changing. Those advisors who put you in a portfolio and simply tell you to just ride the waves may not be equipped to handle the level of volatility we're seeing daily. And it's that constant changing volatility that can put retirement portfolios at a larger risk for loss. Risk management is our number one focus at Bulwark Capital, and our strongest leverage against loss is actively managing every portfolio, looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give you as much upside as possible.
Find out about how Bulwark Capital actively manages risk. Call them now and you'll get a free copy of Zach's Common Sense Investing Guide, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK. Or you can go to knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. Okay, so rambled on there about the market update, looking at the different economic indicators. What's going on that interests me the most? Well, look, especially this week, the whole action in interest rates. Again, I think the reason for it is a bit misleading. I don't think that it's just odd. I'm used to looking at markets that take in all data and score it, you know, in a similar way and look at it agnostically. And it's so bizarre because it's almost as if the Fed and so many market participants just have tunnel vision, right? They're just looking at the things that they think demonstrate strength. And they're not looking at all these things that are trending in the wrong direction. Especially understanding the way interest rates impact things. They take a while. There's that lag effect that we've talked about. But one of the interesting things, and I think that it actually might be, and you're probably not going to hear a lot about this, but I actually think it might be one of the reasons for the pop in interest rates that most people are not talking about. And that is the fact that the account at the U.S. Treasury. So think of the U.S. Treasury as the body that pays Americans' bills. And we look in the Treasury account. I'm forgetting what is it called. It's like the TMA or anyway. It's like STA or anyway. It's the account that the Treasury pays the bills out of. I'm blanking on the name of it. And that account, they burned through that cash much faster than was expected. And so what that means is the Treasury has to rebuild its coffers. It's got to sell more bonds. And what's interesting about that is that the Fed has now not in a big meaningful way, not anywhere close to what they've said. And this is what ticks me off. Right? We're going to push rates up to 5.5-6% on a Fed funds rate, and they've only sold off something like $70 billion off their balance sheet. I can't get my head around that, right? We have a QE sponsored market. One of the reasons that we're in the place that we are, Have 0% interest rates played a part? Absolutely. But I think one of the biggest roles, and I think that you can point to economic data to make this point, which is if we look at the last 15 years, going back 2010, the decade 2010 to 2020 was the weakest decade of growth in the history of our country, including the Great Depression. For your longtime listeners, you've heard me make this point 100 times. But the reason I keep bringing it up is because it pertains to so many other things. It's applicable in so many other conversations. And one of them is about current Fed policy, meaning what was present? The Fed cut rates to zero in 08. Okay. And the market and asset prices, think about houses, right? Housing didn't even really bottom till 2011. Market bounced back a little bit, but not much. And then they started quantitative easing. And you look back now over that decade, 2010 to 2020, we've had the longest period of time without a recession in the history of our country. We've had the biggest, longest bull market in U.S. history. Yes, zero rates certainly played a role. But how do you make up for that, right? Zero rates don't make you have the greatest bull market of all time during your weakest decade of growth, right? That money has to come somewhere, right? Then you look over at the Fed balance sheet, and going into 2008, 2009, you were at $800 billion, $850 billion. Today you're at what, nine? Over nine, or eight and a half, something like that? $8.5 trillion? And yet here we are, they're supposed to be fighting inflation. And I think it's undeniable that a feed into inflation. Now, it didn't create the type of consumer inflation that we were currently dealing with. But certainly, you know, I think it's very hard when you look at the rate of growth on the Fed's balance sheet and put that over the stock market. I just think it's very hard to make an argument that there wasn't a significant impact there. And why, if you're the Fed and you're trying to get this under control, you're jacking up interest rates, which have a disproportionately worse impact on economic impact on the bottom half earners. You're jacking the biggest interest rate increases we've ever seen over such a short period of time, and yet you've only sold down $70 billion of bonds on your balance sheet. And what's interesting to me about that now, too, is if you see the pop in rates, when you see rates go higher, don't just think to yourself rates are going higher. Think to yourself people are selling bonds. Well, in a market where people are selling bonds and now the Treasury is going to have to come. Now, look, maybe they've got a way around it. Maybe the Fed will print something. I don't know. But bottom line is the Treasury needs some dough, which typically means they got to sell bonds. So if they're going to start selling bonds into a market where the Fed is selling them off too, and investors are selling them off, things can get disorderly pretty quick. Now, if they get disorderly, I can tell you exactly what the Fed's going to do. They're going to flip around and start buying them again. But my whole point is this is really interesting. And this is what's so funny about this quote unquote fight with inflation. It's almost like the Fed's in a water fight and they're like putting, or excuse me, well, I'm at the lake. I'll use a lake analogy. It's almost like they're like, hand me a towel. I'm going to jump in the lake. You're like, well, don't you want to after you jump in the lake? Well, no. I want to get dry and wet at the same time, right? We're supposedly fighting inflation, but you won't sell off your balance sheet. And I feel like the Fed keeps painting themselves into a corner where I just think it's really hard to argue anymore that the Fed's not worried about stocks, which they shouldn't be. That's not their purview. They should have nothing to do with that. But I'm just looking at it and going, why would you hike rates to a level where you start busting banks and yet you're still not burning down the bonds on your balance sheet and pulling back on liquidity? And I just think they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, bottom line. I also think that they care about asset prices. I think the Fed cares about the stock market. What would be really interesting to me, and I know there's guys out there, look, and I'm not saying that they're trying to drive it. I'm not saying it's a Fed conspiracy or anything like that. I just think when I look at their actions, I just think it's a very hard argument to make that they don't care. Their actions say otherwise. Now, what I would love to know, I would love, what is it? Sodium pentothal, right? The Truth Serum. I would love to give them that and ask them why. Because that's a really interesting question. Previously, when the economy was stagnant, you know, think of 2013, 2014. I didn't agree with their approach, but I understood the sentiment behind it, meaning they wanted to make asset prices go up, hoping that would stimulate the real economy. Okay, but when you're quote unquote fighting inflation, you need asset prices to go down. So why are you refusing to undo the thing that you did to get asset prices up in the first place? It's like they're trying to get half pregnant. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. And it was like, oh, it's going to be a soft landing. I just think it's ridiculous. And I, you know, Godspeed. Look, I don't want calamitous things to happen to our economy. I don't. What I want it to do, what I want our economy to be, though, is a real marketplace. I want it to be a real market. And it's just not. It's this farcical, nonsensical. Oh, look at the expectation beats. And you go, stop. Stop with all this nonsense. Earnings are down 8.5% over a year. Who gives a rip about your expectations? Well, yeah, but they came in better than expected. But they're at 27 times earnings, and earnings are going down. It's just, I could sit here and rant about this for hours, but, and I'm sure a lot of you at home can sympathize. You're just pulling your hair out. It's like we have to sit here and suffer through all of this ridiculous nonsense literally on a daily basis. But now we're kind of at this point. It will be very interesting to see what happens. And I would not rule out a scenario similar to what we saw in the UK, where they were trying to do that. They were really trying to attack inflation hard, and their bonds just got obliterated, and they had to step in and backstop them effectively. So I wouldn't take the possibility of that off the table. I think it's totally possible. I think it's totally possible for there to be some kind of rate eruption kind of thing. But we got to see, because my other thought, though, at the same time is if that starts to unfold, you're going to see the Fed pivot back and start buying bonds again, even though they're supposedly fighting inflation. Yeah, I got an idea. How about this? How about the Fed stick to their original mandate and support price stability in the dollar? And how about they let free markets do what they're supposed to do? How about that? Right? How about we quit having government interventions with printed money every 16 months? Right? Till you get to the point where we're looking at a marketplace right now going, wait a second, earnings down 9% and valuations going up? What kind of Frankenstein nonsense is this? And everybody's like, well, prices are going up. What's your problem with that? When did we get to a point? Do you believe in free markets or do you not? Right? Meaning free markets are about price accuracy, not just prices going up all the time. And why that's concerning is because what goes up must come down. And the further something goes up illogically, the further it has to fall. The more flames that shoot out of the side of the building, right? The more damage that's created. And that really is the insidious, that's why we're supposed to anyway, it's why you want to avoid bubbles, is because the deconstruction of them is far more painful than the euphoria on the ride up, right? The human cost is much greater. Bankruptcies and foreclosures, family losing their homes, all the things that we've all seen in our lifetime over the past 20, 25 years. And that's the thing that scares you, is you're just pushing these things up to a point where, you know, I mean, just look at these stocks. Look at Apple. Go look at Apple, for instance. I mean, go look at that earnings multiple. How do you explain that earnings multiple? In the face of three contracting, it literally is like it's getting more valuable as it makes less money. And it's a great company. I mean, I think that they're way behind on the innovation scale. I've got their brand new phone, and it is more buggy. There's no question they've slowed down on that front. They're no longer a leader in anything. Still a great company, the greatest profit machine of all time. But go look at the growth rates. You don't have to take my word for it. It is what it is. And how many investors out there are sitting on a portfolio that's 40, 50% Apple? A lot. What's the other composition? Well, it's 15% Microsoft, right? It's 10%, 12% Amazon. And that's what scares you about the retail portfolio. You look at how overweight they are and all the stuff. This is the stuff that's struggling. At the same time, and I said Amazon just reported a good quarter. And they're less expensive than they have been in the past. But I see a lot of risk, guys. And I see a lot of portfolios out there that have zero ability to protect you against that risk. Okay, we can do that. You don't have to make one of these binary investment choices. You don't have to sit there and say, hey, if things continue, if the magical carpet ride continues, we're going to retire great. If it doesn't, we're living in the poorhouse. That ain't a retirement plan. That's a retirement dream. Okay, call us for a retirement plan. Call us for risk management. Call us to discuss how we can build you a portfolio where you'll be fine regardless of what happens, where there's less fees, where there's more upside potential. There's significantly less risk. So then no matter what happens, you're okay. Like I said, at a lower cost. There's a better way, guys. And don't come to that realization after half your money's gone. And to be clear, I don't think the entire stock market is on the edge of a 50% loss. But I look at a lot of stocks out there that have run up 50, 100, 150 times our percent this year that have no business doing it. And unfortunately, that's what comprises most of your portfolios. There's a better way. Call us, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com, bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. The interview that I'm doing today will actually drop Monday. So don't think I'm stiffing you. Just the way it worked out, being at the lake, all that kind of stuff. The interview should post Monday evening. Not going to tell you who it is, but it is happening. I confirmed it yesterday. And it's going to be a great one. A guy that has been on fire, been on the show before. He's been on fire this year. He's actually had a heck of a run, and he's a heck of a good trader. But anyway, we're going to have him on to get an econ update and see what's happening from his side of things. You're not going to want to miss that. Anyway, have a great weekend. We'll be back next week. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham now at knowyourriskradio.com. Zach will be back with more Know Your Risk Radio next Saturday at noon on 97.3 Cairo FM and AM 770 KTTH.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.